Nothing says summer like a rich, creamy ice cream float from Skyline. Made with two scoops of fresh vanilla ice cream and your choice of Barq's Root Beer, Barq's Red Cream Soda, or any of their Coke products. At participating Skyline locations while supplies last.
I'm Jake Deptula, and this is Loveless Fridays. Here we delve deeper into the topics, themes, and stories featured on Loveless Fear. I'm excited to welcome back Desiree from episode 2 of Loveless Fear. His name was Smitty. In a time before Tinder, Desiree takes the plunge into online dating. She catches the eye of Smitty, a seemingly handsome stranger whose Polaroid profile snapshots obscure his hidden reality. Here's a clip from that episode.
He's a handsome-looking guy. He seemed about my age. We agreed to a phone call. And then he's like, you know, I really think I should take you to my place and I'll rub your feet. So I block him. Even when I would block him, there would be other accounts that I would have to block later. He was all over the place. I mean, I couldn't avoid him. So my best friend says, give the guy a chance. I don't necessarily trust her instincts, but this time I'm like, maybe I'm wrong. And then he's like, oh, you know, I want to take you home, but I want to take you to my place. And I knew the neighborhood where he was taking me to, so I knew if I had to make a run for it, I could get out of there.
Desiree, welcome back. For anyone who hasn't listened to your episode, can you share a little bit about your story?
I ran into his profile on some random website that was like MySpace or something. And I kept finding him. So in whatever social media existed at the time, I would show up there and then he would pop in. It was wild. So I couldn't get away from him. I had agreed to go out with him and he gave me creepy vibes. And so I blocked him, put him away for a while. And then my girlfriend meets him somewhere random. She met him at the public library, but I wasn't there. And she's like, I want you to meet this guy. Who you want me to meet? And then she sends me this guy's picture. And I'm like, I know that guy. But when she said, hey, you should give him a chance, I thought maybe she saw something in him that I didn't. So I agreed to go out with him. And he turned out to be way older than his picture. And we went to the Golden Corral and got a senior citizen discount for the meal. It was like dating my father. He was significantly older. He was in his 60s, but the picture that he had on his site was more like he was in his 30s.
There's a lot of theories about this particular episode that have come up, and I've had a lot of questions from different listeners. One of the theories is that your girlfriend really did set you up. She knew exactly what you were going to get into. And I think that also the economic part is to kind of treat him like a sugar daddy.
Whoever came with that theory is very likely spot on. I was a DJ and I hosted weddings and karaoke nights and the whole nine. And she used to hang out with me because my guests would give me free drinks.
I got to tell you, I think the wallet was out and she would just throw you under the bus on this one, unfortunately.
I was very willing to believe that, right? Hey, you know what? This guy, he's old and he might, if you can woo him, you can get him to take us places and do things. Because she used to regularly, even though she was married or she had gotten married during the course of our friendship, she would still want to come hang out with me and my dates, right? Because my dates would buy us both dinner or everybody dinner or whatever. And so I definitely suspected that. And that's why I pretty much ended our friendship after that happened.
You mentioned, obviously, you avoided, blocked, and tried to escape Smitty, and then also your friend as well. It was good that you had the instinct to kind of cut both of them out of your life.
I didn't even really have to, like, block or whatever. Mm-hmm. It was just more or less like, oh, the text would sit unread. You know, I effectively ghosted her. Yeah, Gray rocked her. And the truth is, it hurt me, right? Because she was my best friend at the time. I was completely offended at the fact, you know, it's one thing to find a cute guy that at least had some personality or whatever and go, hey, girl, hey. But to like purposefully send someone when I've already told you in our conversation that, you know, I had a bad vibe about him before or whatever. You know, at the time, that should have been a red flag about the friendship before I met him, that she was trying to overcome my boundaries so that she could probably would end up getting what she thought she wanted. And it's been like a million years and it still bothers me.
I will say this, though. At the same time he breaks out his senior discount, he's also breaking out his fetishes on the first date.
Oh my God. And the thing is, I am not a kink shamer. I mean, do the things you enjoy doing. If feet is your thing, that's fine. But that's one of my boundaries.
Well, you mentioned that. Don't touch your feet or else you get punched.
I don't. Oh, man.
The circumstances of this scenario, I mean, there are some questions that have come up from different listeners. I'm going to tell you. They're a little bit on the comical side, if I can share them with you.
Yeah.
One of them is on a scale of 1 to I just met my grandfather. How surprised were you when Smitty showed up?
I was extremely surprised because, you know, you look at a picture and you go, well, you know, the person's probably not going to look exactly like that because I know I wear wigs. I wear my hair different styles. I change my clothing styles from day to day. So and whatever makeup I feel like wearing. So I never look the same. So I don't expect I expect people to be a little bit shocked when they meet me in person because I don't actually look like my pictures, but I at least try to look within, you know, a couple of years. I really had to control my facial expressions because I was stunned. You're Smitty?
Well, there's another theory about this, and here this is gonna lean into the next question that came up. Did you feel you were on a weird episode of Catfish, but with a senior twist?
I think it was a curiosity. So I guess in a way it was a weird episode of Catfish, and I was curious as to where it was going to take me. I wasn't scared of the guy. He was creepy, but I wasn't scared of him.
There is a fishing terminology we can use as bait and switch.
Ah, yes. Now that, absolutely, right? Yeah. Here's a picture of me when I was a beautiful young man. But here I am today.
Well, okay. There's another theory about this too that came up in conversation that I've had is that it wasn't that Smitty was trying to deceive anyone. It's just he didn't know or have access to a modern day camera. Webcam, phone cam. And that's a fair assessment.
I cannot avow that or not, because I didn't actually see if he had one of those, what do they call those, jitterbug phones?
Oh, flip phone or whatever? Yeah. Yes. I mean, in all fairness, that could have been the case.
In which case, he wouldn't have been able to take like a selfie, have a challenge with trying to figure out, okay, how do I take these pictures and how do I make them into something I put on the internet or put on my phone?
Well, from the method, here's what I've deduced from what you've told me. The photos that you saw may have been scanned on a flatbed.
Yeah. Okay.
He may have put old Polaroids on a flatbed and then literally just uploaded those right to the site. Okay, to have that digital file, because obviously there was no webcam involved. If he had a webcam, he would have just used it and taken the picture of the Polaroid off it if he was trying to deceive you, right?
Right.
And I also think this too, whatever encouragement or guidance Smitty was getting online, everything from what pictures to post and make sure you put your name in all caps so they notice you. You got to stand out here.
Put your best picture forward. I mean, it's very possible that's all he had at that point.
He got the memo, put your best Polaroid forward. Mm-hmm. So he didn't get the picture part. You can't cheat a Polaroid, right?
You cannot.
You can't. So he's thinking like, this is a real picture. Well, some of the other questions came up. Did you ever think about introducing Smitty to your grandma just to see?
In another life, another timeline, very likely, but unfortunately both my grandmothers are deceased at the time. But he was sweet enough, but I don't know, because, you know, I told you I went to his house and I saw he was like a clutter bug. Yeah. Probably not. My grandmothers would not have tolerated that.
To be fair, I think some of the context is this. Let's put this in perspective. Smitty was going after younger women. Okay. Mm-hmm. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. You could claim that he wasn't trying to catfish, with the exception of this. He was going after you online.
Yeah.
Your friend meets him coincidentally, and then all of a sudden it comes together. You're not going to forget his name. He puts it in all caps. He's following you on every single app that you even have an account to.
Right.
Okay. It's not like you can make a move without this guy sort of sliding into your DMs. So that being said, is another question that came up. Is would you say this date was more of a comedy show or a horror movie? And then what genre does she think it would fit into?
Definitely comedy. Like comedy, I said, wasn't scared.
Not romantic comedy, obviously.
Not romantic comedy, but like one of those almost like an eat, pray, love type of situation. Because it told me something about myself, right? So I did learn a lesson at the end, but it's like when Ellen DeGeneres tried to make a romantic movie. It was called Finding Mr. Right or whatever it was.
Oh, it was called Mr. Wrong.
Mr. Wrong. That's right. Yeah. And it was like that.
Wow. Okay. Well, Smitty's a character that basically he's timeless in his own way.
He is.
He really is.
And he fits in the other genre of men I've dated that were like really interesting stories to tell, but 0 out of 10. So I'll give you a little bit of wisdom that my mother gave me. My mother and I were not great friends or whatever. Mm-hmm. We were estranged when she passed away. But one of the things that my mother told me to do that I still do to this day is she said, listen, if you are praying for the perfect man, don't just pray about it. Make a list. She said, make an actual list. So I did. So I'm like, the man of my dreams has to have this, 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 and this. And I think my first husband checked most of those boxes, but some of the other ones too that I didn't want. And I wasn't paying attention to those red flags. There's three things that has to be on that list. And it's a joke from the movie Boomerang. If you remember that with Eddie Murphy and Halle Berry.
Of course I have. Yeah.
And homegirl, they're in the club and they're in the bathroom and they're like, you know, I asked, this guy was asking me out and I asked him, what do you guys, he's like, you got to have the alphabet. He's got to have a J-O-B, an A-P-T, and a C-A-R. Those are my top three. And people go, why so specific or whatever? Because, okay, and if you listen to any of the dating TikToks or whatever, you mm-hmm. know why. But he's got to have a J-O-B. He's got to have a job. I don't care if it's working at McDonald's or freaking Hewlett Packard. Mm-hmm. He's got a job. I know he's responsible. He's getting up every day and he's doing the thing, all right? If he's retired, but he's got good retirement money, okay, that means he had a good job and I'm okay with that substitute. APT, an apartment, right? Why? Because I don't want him slipping into my bathroom, dropping a toothbrush, and then sticking around for 3 years. That has happened, okay? So that means his own APT. That doesn't mean live with his mama. That doesn't mean live with his sister. Mm-hmm. That means his own apartment, because he's less likely to, oh gosh, my roommates are driving me crazy. Can I stay here another night? And then all of a sudden you're married and you're like, wait, when did that happen? And a CAR, because I don't want to have to be driving him everywhere he needs to go, especially when you're first meeting. I need to know that he's going to be able to meet me at a neutral location. If I have to pick him up, or he has to pick me up, because so the rules still apply to me too, right? I need to have a job. I won't even think about dating if I don't have a job, a car, mm-hmm. and an apartment. I'm basically asking for the same standards that I expect of myself.
Can you take us back to when you first started dating? What was that experience like for you?
When I started dating, it was more or less you go to a bar, a club, or some other random place. I met a guy once that I dated for several months that I met at a laundromat. There was no websites or whatever. If you had the money, you could do like a matchmaker program mm-hmm. they used to have where you could go to this place. And I never experienced it myself, but I knew people that did. You could go and do a video dating. I guess that's what they called it. So you'd go and you'd sit in front of a live video camera and talk about yourself and talk about your wants and your needs. And then somebody else would come along maybe a few days or weeks later and go, I want to see 17354. And then they'd put your videotape in. They go, oh, I like this one, this one, this one. And just based off of a video, that started fading out. But that was something I had always maybe wanted to try. I hadn't met anybody where it was successful, but I'd heard of it done. When I first moved to this town that I live now, and I've lived here for 30 some years, the internet finally became a thing and everybody had them. And I got my first computer, which was a Dell, right? Because I was going to college and get online, get on AOL, and you start looking for chats of interest. And back in those days, the only way people could reach out to you is if they slid into your DMs. And I met a number of guys, and I would meet them at work. I would meet them, you know, at a restaurant. I tried to make sure I met them in public so that if anything went awry, there would be a phone nearby or whatever. But I had a lot of awkward dates or a lot of awkward meetings through AOL. Like the one time we went through all the trouble of like dressing up and making sure we had like a red flower or whatever. And the guy walked in the restaurant and I saw he had the red flower. And then he turned around when he saw me. I was like, oh, he didn't even bother. It's like, okay, well, all right, fine. But then I've had people that did show up and then they're like, oh, I've lost my wallet. Like, what? But I met both of my husbands, ex-husbands now, on the internet. I met one on AOL. Remember that? Yeah, you've got mail. This next guy that I want to tell you about, Mike, that I really kind of grew up out of that. So I didn't drive, but I was a working mom and I was taking the bus all the time. But in this neighborhood, the bus went far away. I had to walk several blocks to get there and the whole thing. And it was taking me forever to get to work. So I was like, hey, what's a great way to get a ride? Because we didn't have Uber then, and calling a taxi just wasn't financially viable. And I used to work for a one ad place. I worked for the Thrifty Nickel. I put an ad in the Thrifty Nickel because I could get it for free. Hey, I need a driver. Okay, great. So I met this young man, his name was Michael, and he offered to be my driver for, I think it was like $50 a week I was willing to pay him. I can't remember, but it was something like that, right? And so the first couple of days, no problem. He picked me up, took me to work, picked me up, took me to work, picked me up from work, took me home. But then on a Saturday afternoon, he takes me wherever I needed to go. It might have been a doctor's appointment or something. And I had my child with me at the time. I had my son with me. And he's like, hey, we got to go to my house real quick because I need to pick something up. I'm like, whatever. He's been a nice guy for two interactions. How bad could it be? Because he seemed super nice. Tiny little house, adorable little house. I think it was a precursor for what we call tiny houses now, because this thing was small, but it was a nice little house. Go in this house with plywood walls, and I sit down on the sofa. He shows me around the place, but I swear we could stand in one spot and just go, here's the kitchen, here's the bedroom, here's the bathroom. I sit on the sofa, he turns on the TV, and I'm watching whatever is on the TV, maybe the news, maybe some local, whatever, PBS or something. And he asked if he could get me something to drink. I had my son's baby bottle and my son was in my lap. And I'm watching TV, minding my business. And all of a sudden, he's like, I'll be right back. He's quiet. But then when he pops up, I don't recall how, but he showed up right next to me. Right next to me, in my face, I'm sitting down and his penis is in my face. And my first instinct was, okay, you're in danger. And this person has his penis in your face, right? What do you do? But I just looked at him and I said, in front of my kid? I played it off. Like, you're so funny. Go do what you got. He ended up taking care of himself, but he didn't make me do anything. Okay. He took care of himself, pulled himself together. Can I give you a ride home? Hell yes. Gives me a ride home. And then I fire him. I did a really dumb thing later. He called me a month later. He's like, I'd like to take you out to apologize for what happened. And I'm like, okay, because I'm dumb. I was only 20-something. So we go out. I lived in Nebraska, Omaha, Nebraska. And in between Omaha, Nebraska and Council Bluffs, Iowa, is a little lake called Carter Lake. We sat in the front of that lake. We were pulled in front of that lake. And let me tell you, I remember like it was yesterday, but it's been like 40 years or whatever. It was a beautiful freaking night. The moon shone on the lake And there was the star or the planet or whatever that was like far off in the distance, looked like a little star hanging there, like a diamond, right? Gorgeous night. It was beautiful. But I'm just hanging out with this guy. I still don't know him from Adam. I know he's a creep. And then he's like, so, you know, I'm really sorry about what happened and everything. And I was wondering if you could give me another chance. And I'm like, excuse me? He's like, would you marry me?
What?
Yes. He asked me to marry him. And I was like, I didn't want to tell no in that moment because I wanted to make sure I got home, right? So I was just like, let me think about that. So he took me home and, you know, he walked me to my door. You know, he tried to move in for a kiss. I was like, no, we need to talk about this later. And I get in, I lock the door. The next day I called him and I said, no, I can't marry you. I'm not ready to get married. I let him down gently. I didn't say, you're a freaking creep and whatever. And I wasn't worried about him because one of the reasons why he was asking if I would marry him is because he was leaving. And he wanted to take a wife with him. No, thank you. I am not interested in getting married to you. And I wouldn't be married for many, many years since because I kept running into creeps like that. Even when I think on that, that was me not paying attention to my own red flags and saying yes when I should have said no, no, thank you. I mean, I have dated some really weird guys and some guys that were scary. Maybe it's just my nature, how I was raised, because part of me is like, okay, you know, this could be dangerous. That's the frontal lobe going, don't do this, right? But there's the other part of me that's like, but I'm bored. It's Friday. You know, it's probably going to be perfectly fine. So let me go out. And at the very least, I'll have a story to tell. And the truth is, I am a storyteller. I write short stories and things like that. So it's like, okay, if you don't live, what do you write about? Right. And so that is probably part of that is like, okay, if I do everything safe, then I won't have anything worth writing about.
Well, to your point, though, is like you create boundaries for yourself, right? Safe boundaries as long as you're capable of doing so. However, right. When you put yourself into these situations, what does that open up for you? Because you think you can anticipate a certain amount of behavior, a certain amount of activity, or what you're going to be in store for, but it doesn't always work out that way.
It doesn't. And I have put myself in situations that I ended up having to, we'll just say that ended up dangerously. I wasn't harmed, but depending on how I would have reacted in a different way, I might have been. So I was put in situations that I would otherwise not have consented to, but because I didn't have a way out, I agreed to certain situations that I should have, that I never would have done before. Whenever I've been in a dangerous situation, I've dealt with it. In other words, I actually, you know, where we might consider it, what, date rape, sexual assault. Yeah. There's been times where I have, on more than one occasion, where I have been stuck in a car or a building with somebody I didn't really know. In the neighborhood, I had no idea where I was, completely sober because I'm not really a drinker. But because when I set my boundaries, I'm really good about setting my boundaries. But when I get to the point where I start going, oh, it's okay, what could go wrong? That's usually when I end up regretting my decisions, right? So when I take my list, my little list of things I expect and go, oh, that's not important. Oh, that's not important. That's when I let all my barriers down, which is really dumb, or at least it was at that time. That doesn't happen now because I don't put myself in those situations anymore. But when I was younger, I would, right? So I would go along. Because I don't want this person to hurt me. Maybe I'll enjoy myself and it's just because I'm tired. You know, I made excuses for myself or them.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
You know, I've been dating recently, like in the last couple of years, and I've had that where like, oh, we had a nice conversation and things mm-hmm. are going, and then something they said or did was just off. And now, and in the old days, I would have said, oh, girl, you're just too sensitive. You know, I met this guy who said something transphobic. And in the past, I would have said, oh, you know, maybe you could convince him that he's wrong. But my gut, it was just telling me, you know what? Mm-mm. Because if he's transphobic, there's some other misogynistic things he's dealing with that is going to come up to the forefront when you start talking about, you know, women should be women and things like that.
Right. I mean, yes. You see little behavioral traits that seem sort of innocuous at first, or just things yes. that you may think they're either kidding or they're just not that deeply rooted into what's behind those statements. And then you find out later that unfortunately.
Exactly right. And that's the thing, but that's the benefit of having dated so often and different types of people, because now you start to see more clearly what the signs are. The joking about hurting other people, or the joking about the type of woman they prefer. And it's a good thing you're not that type of woman, but you're like, but my best friend is. So you're mocking this type of individual. And so that means I can't date you. So trust your gut, keep your boundaries strong, and you can trust your gut at any time, even after you've done the deed, right? And so you start breaking your own boundaries down until it's too late. You've gotten married and things start going awry, because that's what happened in both my marriages. Things went awry, literally. We said I do on a Friday, and by Monday it was like, who the hell are you? Who did I marry? A partner will say or do any and everything to get you to stay in love with them, and especially when we're talking love bombing, right? Because that does happen a lot. That love bombing is done so it can overcome your boundaries, so it can overcome your confidence and your gut, right? Because the more time you have to think, the more likely you are to see the red flags and go, oh no, bye. There's hardly any secrets anymore. So bad secrets are being revealed. So people who thought they could get away with crap for a long time are finally getting called out. The Smitties of the world
right.
are being uncovered. Even me confessing the stories of Smitty and some of these other knuckleheads I encountered, and that's probably just scratching the surface of some of the really dumb dates I went on. It's about holding me accountable for being so dense back in the day, and maybe helping other people to be accountable. Like, here are the red flags of meeting a creepy guy. Now you know. Now you can't say you didn't know later. Giving ourselves and each other permission to stand up for ourselves. I'm Gen X, but it felt like for a long time, women weren't allowed to question how they felt. You know, they're there. You're being too militant. You're being too much of a feminist. You need to be a girl's girl and let a man be a man. And we would disregard our boundaries for that reason, because we go, oh, you know what? I'm just being too sensitive. Maybe I'm being too hard on the guy. And so we would override our own senses, because people would essentially mock us or tell us, you know, that's why you can't find a boyfriend, because your standards are too high. And then you're like, then you realize your standards actually weren't high enough, because you meet a guy like Smitty and you don't say, hey, that's not you in the picture. Because that's what I should have done, right?
What were some of your thoughts when you listened back to your episode of Loveless Fear?
Just, I was a moron. That was
what I thought. I was like, oh my God, I would probably throttle my daughter if she did, or any of my sons, if she did what I did. I would definitely be like, don't go out with that guy. I would come to the door. You know, I would, because my kids still live with me. I would come to the door and go, oh, is this Smitty? You don't look anything like your picture, sir. You know, I would have been a lot bolder, right? I would have said, you don't look like this guy. I would have, you know, I would have said, okay, we're not going anywhere. If you'd like to sit on my porch and chat, or I'll get my car and I'll meet you somewhere. But I would not have gotten in it. I might have still talked to him. Older guy, probably lonely, you know. I could have seen going out with him, but in a neutral setting where I drove my own car and we would meet someplace very public where people I knew could see us together or whatever. I don't know. I would have done things a lot differently, though. Definitely.
Thank you for joining Desiree and I on Loveless Fridays. If you have a dating or relationship story to share or want to participate in a discussion here on Loveless Fridays, DM me on Instagram at lovelessfearpod or email me at lovelessfearpod@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, sharing, and supporting. Links to guest social media and some content mentioned are in our show notes. If you know someone who's being abused by a partner, there is help available. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, the National Domestic Violence Hotline provides essential tools and support to help survivors of domestic violence so they can live their lives free of abuse. Call 1-800-799-SAFE. That's 1-800-799-7233. Or text START to 88788.
I can't tell you how often I hear, oh, I'm a little OCD. I like things neat. That's not OCD. I'm Howie Mandel, and I know this because I have OCD. Actual OCD causes relentless, unwanted thoughts. What if I did something terrible and forgot? What if I'm a bad person? Why am I thinking this terrible thing? It makes you question absolutely everything, and you'll do anything to feel better. OCD is debilitating, but it's also highly treatable with the right kind of therapy. Regular talk therapy doesn't cut it. OCD needs specialized therapy. That's why I want to tell you about NoCD. NoCD is the world's largest virtual therapy provider for OCD. Their licensed therapists provide specialized therapy virtually, and it's covered by insurance for over 155 million Americans. If you think you might be struggling with OCD, visit NoCD.com to schedule a free 15-minute call and learn more. That's NoCD.com.